Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel.
Good morning, Nueva York. This is the new morning show with King Downing and Johanna Fernandez. If you're waking up now, rise and shine. If you're already up, stay with us. And if you're one of those workers who does the overnight and you're turning in, let us tuck you in. So today, a new film follows a Detroit mailman, a mail person, excuse me, through a devastated city. And we're going to be giving another update of the dramatic things that are going on in Bolivia. And we'll be taking your calls, so stay with us.
Butterflies are having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace.
And first, the news.
Good morning. Last night, 10 Democratic presidential hopefuls faced off in Atlanta. The debate was hosted by MSNBC and The Washington Post. California Senator Kamala Harris is calling herself the candidate who is poised to revive the coalition of voters that sent Barack Obama to the White House. She highlighted her ability to connect with black women in particular, saying the Democratic Party has often relied on them to win without truly focusing on their issues. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker say they'd address racial and income disparities in housing. And Booker attacked Warren's plan, which would pay for social programs at home. She's proposed raising taxes by 2% on wealth over $50 million to finance a host of programs, including universal preschool and higher teacher pay. Warren calls her policy transformative. Booker, who is fighting to qualify for the December debate, said Warren's proposal is cumbersome, that it failed in other countries and would stunt economic growth in blighted urban areas. On foreign policy, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says it's time to bring our troops home from Afghanistan, and he says he'd work with the international community to do so. Former Vice President Joe Biden and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar said they'd work to rebuild relationships with allies. Hawaii's Senator Tulsi Gabbard doubled down on earlier comments that Clinton represents the personification of the rot in the Democratic Party. She says the party is influenced by a foreign policy establishment that supports regime change wars. She calls it the Bush-Clinton-Trump foreign policy doctrine. On climate change, the candidate who framed his candidacy around the issue, billionaire businessman Tom Steyer, says neither Biden nor Warren would characterize climate change as the most critical issue. Biden countered, calling climate change the existential threat to humanity. Bernie Sanders repeated his suggestion that executives in the fossil fuel industry could be prosecuted for their actions. As with previous Democratic debates, there was a focus on Medicare for all. Here's Senator Warren, followed by Senator Sanders, who got the first laugh of the night.
People have had a chance to feel it and taste it and live with it. We're going to vote and we're going to want Medicare for all.
Senator, thank you, Senator. Senator Sanders, let me bring you into this conversation.
Thank you. I wrote the damn bill.
The question. Well, I want to ask you the question this way, Senator Sanders. You described your campaign, including your plans for Medicare for All, as a political revolution.
Yes.
President Obama explicitly said the country is, quote, less revolutionary than it is interested in improvement. The average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it, end quote. Is President Obama wrong?
No, he's right. We don't have to tear down the system. But we do have to do what the American people want. And the American people understand today that the current healthcare system is not only cruel, it is dysfunctional.
Meanwhile, billionaire businessman Michael Bloomberg, who was not at the debate and is not yet in the race, New York City's former mayor, who apologized for the NYPD's failed stop and frisk policy over the weekend, is rolling out plans to spend an estimated $15 to $20 million on a voter registration drive to weaken Donald Trump's reelection chances in five battleground states. The effort will target 500,000 traditionally underrepresented Black, Latino, and Asian voters, as well as young voters and those living in rural areas. Bernie Sanders warns that Democrats will lose the election if they are consumed by Donald Trump. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
All right. So thank you for those news pieces, and you're listening to the new morning show with King Downing. And good morning, and your name, and how do you feel? It's almost like you're a caller.
Johanna Fernandez. How am I feeling this morning? I am not getting a lot of sleep, but New Yorkers know what that feels like.
Yeah, I do.
But I had some good classes last night, so I teach till 24 hours in the morning. I teach till very late on Wednesdays and Mondays, and we were reading yesterday, We Want Freedom, A Life in the Black Panther Party by Mumia Abu-Jamal, which is one of the best books I think Mumia has written of the 13 or 14. And so I asked my students, would you have joined the Black Panther Party? And I did not expect the complexity of answers I got. So it was wonderful.
And so give me an example. What did one say?
Well, a number of students said that because they now understand the role of the government and the influence of COINTELPRO on the party and its demise, they wouldn't join because their work would be for naught. Others said, well, now that I know what the Black Panther Party was truly about, how couldn't I join? Others said, well, now that we have knowledge of how the party was destroyed, wouldn't we fight to develop strategies to circumvent repression? It was just, it was just a complex discussion in which students spoke from the perspective of their lives today. Some of them said, well, you know, I'm Black and I've had access to education and I live in Long Island, so I don't know that I would have suffered enough to be ride or die like the Black Panther Party. They took into account class and conditions and just one of those surprises in the classroom that is rare.
Great. So just a couple of footnotes to add, because not all of our folks know, even though many of our listeners do, Mumia Abu-Jamal was a member of the Philadelphia Black Panther Party. He joined at either the age of 15 or 16 and was also part of the repression that was going on in Philadelphia, not only by the entire economic system, but by the notorious Philadelphia Police Department. And someday I'll tell some of the stories of what happened when I used to go down there and visit my cousins. So anyway, he became a world-renowned journalist and then was eventually convicted of killing a police officer, which he has vehemently denied and which evidence has also demonstrated, including some of your work and your documentaries. So the other thing I wanted to just footnote is that COINTELPRO also stands for the counterintelligence program that the U.S. government mounted against the Black Panther Party, Martin Luther King, and almost every group that was doing any kind of advocacy. And based on that repression, which didn't come out until later, we found they were using all kinds of tactics to destroy these kinds of movements. So it's great that the students are talking about that as well.
Must be some word today, yeah. From my boyfriend's old
Shimmy Shimmy Cocoa Pop. Who can remember Mr. Postman from the Marvelettes? Most people don't. It was done in 1961, and probably two-thirds of the country wasn't even born yet. But go back into the crates and check it out. So it turns out that Wendell is a male person who walks around the city of Detroit, as he has for 30 years. And what he uncovers in this upcoming documentary that is called Detroit 48202, based on the zip code there, he talks about and meets with people who are suffering the devastation there. And so this film is not only a look at his journey around the neighborhood and the destruction, but also analyzes the deep economic consequences and causes of all of this. And we have on the line the producer-director of Detroit 48202, Pam Sporn from Greedo Productions. Thank you for coming on short notice and early in the morning.
That's okay. Glad to be here with you.
So tell me about Wendell. What's up with his life and his walk through these neighborhoods?
Well, Wendell now has been able to retire.
Oh, okay.
Out in California with his children, which is what he wanted to do, to be with his family. And so he's happy out there, but he does miss his folks in Detroit. And he goes back there quite often to visit. So Wendell's a remarkable person. We met each other in high school, actually, many years ago at Cass Technical High School.
Oh, so you're from Detroit.
I grew up in Detroit.
Detroit, okay. Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead.
There's a T-shirt that I have to get that someone's making in Detroit. It says, Detroit raised me. So I've been wearing a T-shirt that says, imported from Detroit. And I need to get the Detroit Raised Me T-shirt.
Good. And now, we have an upcoming program on another film, and the producer of that film had a T-shirt that said Detroit is everyone. So I'll have to see if I can find that one for you, and we'll get that one to you. Maybe we'll swap T-shirts. Yeah, so yes. So Wendell is going around, and what does he find?
So Wendell has had a deep relationship with the customers on his route. He happened to be in the same route for 30 years by the time he retired. And the route is in the New Center area of Detroit, which is right smack in the middle of the city. And it's also an area that is just above where the major development is going on. So it's kind of the gentrification, if you might say, is pushing up against West Grand Boulevard, and his route is just north of that. But the neighborhood is a primarily black working class neighborhood with streets that include more middle class, black middle class houses, very well kept. And like all of Detroit, it's a mixture of some very well kept homes that have fallen into foreclosure due to the financial crisis and predatory lending. There are vacant lots, and so it's a real mix of this. There are apartment buildings, but Wendell has a deep relationship with these people, and over the years had learned about their stories and their histories. And some of those stories are very reflective of the historical and economic process that has happened.
Yeah, let's hold it there because we have the trailer. So let's take a listen, and then we'll continue the conversation.
Okay.
My name is Wendell Watkins. I'm a mail carrier around this area.
How many houses have you seen come and go?
You get so used to this stuff, you don't realize how much stuff is messed up until you walk with somebody that's not from around here. These corporations buy up places, so then they just board it up and hold it for speculation.
It's like the fault of people who made decisions decades before.
The Sojourner Truth homes were opened in 1942.
We moved out to Sojourner Truth Project.
Mm-hmm. She was one of the first group.
We were the first group that ever moved in. The whites didn't want our color to live out there.
This is the wall that used to demarcate where they're going to have the white neighborhood from the black neighborhood. Separate but not equal.
You didn't go past 8 miles, you stayed over here.
You didn't even think
six
about
miles,
it.
Yeah.
If you look at the records, you'll find folder after folder of African Americans that had been harassed by the police. Detroit lost 130 to 140,000 auto industry jobs.
You layer on top of that racial conflict and you have the recipe for a disaster.
People had started gathering on 12th Street and started bricking them, and the rebellion had broke out.
That must have been something there to see all this stuff going on.
I was there when it was a kid got shot.
I remember the National Guard coming in. I remember seeing men in uniforms with these big guns.
When the rebellion was over, we had so many 50 caliber machine gun shells. We picked them all up and we used them for necklaces. That ain't
right. Worst anger I feel about this whole situation about Detroit going down is the fact that it's the audacity of these guys that have just taken all they could out of the city. And then turning around and even giving people the impression that it's their fault.
To do these kinds of histories is healing work. It's healing to tell children, this is not you.
Yes, and so thank you for that. So what was the inspiration and what were the challenges in making a film of this type?
So the inspiration for the film is that, as I said, I grew up in Detroit and Detroit really shaped me. Politically, gave me an understanding of labor, of history, of racism, and it informed the way I went about my life teaching high school in the Bronx and in Harlem all these years in New York City. But I hadn't returned to Detroit for a while, and because my parents passed on, and I did return after a gap of about 10 years, and I was not unaware of, obviously, the economic decline that had happened in Detroit, but I was really stunned by just seeing the neighborhoods that I had lived in and the devastated condition they were in. And so Wendell, you know, as I said, I've known him for many years, and I thought, wow, if I could follow him around his postal route, that could be like a microcosm for the city, and I can get answers to what happened to the city. And he agreed readily, and what I thought would be a short project turned into a 6.5-year project. So that's one of the challenges. These kinds of projects take a long time, and when you, I my style of filmmaking is I just jump in with my camera, whether I have funding or not, because if I waited for funding, I'd never get anything done. But eventually I was able to get a grant from Just Films, the Ford Foundation, and the New York State Council on the Arts that allowed me to finish and work with an editor, a fine editor. Challenging, the storytelling was challenging because it's a lot of history. It's a complex history, and it's trying to weave Wendell's story and really keep the story grounded and foregrounding the voices of those Black working class Detroiters, foregrounding those voices and getting all of the political and historical analysis into it that I wanted was challenging. I had over 90 hours of footage, but the trailer that you just played, you can hear some of those dynamic voices that include Miss Owens, who as a young person had the experience of moving into the Sojourner Truth Projects.
Hey, Pam, I'm going to jump in here for a second because Johanna has a question.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
But before, you're listening to Pam Sporn, who's the director of a new film that follows a postman through the city of Detroit. You're listening to listener-sponsored non-corporate WBAI at 99.5 New York, streaming on WBAI.org. Pam, thank you so much for the work. What a gripping story. It reminds me of all things, the poem by Thoreau, On Walking, or Walking, which is about the relationship between nature and human beings. But in many ways, this is like a modern rendition, the opposite of that, because clearly the postman is walking through this deindustrialized town where people are trying to keep their communities together under horrific conditions. But I'm just wondering, you're speaking of history that a lot of young people do not know. And so what is your message to a new generation of young people who grew up in this environment, and this is all they've seen, there and are not aware of this, the history that preceded deindustrialization?
Right. Well, the message is to dig into community and learn the history, that there are really valuable folks right around us that hold this history and lessons, and that the message is that the conditions in these cities, and Detroit is not the only one. I mean, we can look at where I live in the experience that the Bronx has gone through, cities like Baltimore and many cities. The important thing is that young people and older people know that it's not the fault of the people who have remained in these communities, and those who have been forced to leave. It's a legacy of economic decisions made by those in power, whether in political power or economic power, that have affected the way we have been forced to live in these cities. But I also want to emphasize the resilience of these communities, from Detroit to the Bronx to all over the country. And that's one thing that comes through in my film, I feel, even though we're looking at some difficult situations, but the legacy of resilience and fight back, from people like General Baker to Julia Putnam starting the Bog School. And so one of my favorite lines in the film is where Julia Putnam says, to do these kinds of histories is healing work. It's healing to tell children that this is not you. And so that, and Wendell talks about that too, that understanding the policy decisions behind what has happened, and understanding the history of fight back, so that in this film you learn about groups like DRUM, Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement.
Great and organization.
Yeah, that we need to know this history to understand what happened on a corporate and economic level, but also what happened by people joining together. And there are tremendous activists, artists, urban farmers, educators in Detroit doing that work still, that never gave up.
So that's
my message to young people.
Great. We want to put a quick pin in it. And you hear that. So you know what time it is. It's time for you to call in. And so if you have any questions for Pam, or let's focus on Pam now. If you have any questions for Pam, Detroit, or the film, call in now. The number is 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. So call me, call us. So, you are listening to The Morning Show, and we're on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and streaming live on WBAI.org. The program is Good Morning Nueva York. I keep saying that. So, I say Good Morning Nueva New York to you, and then I tell you that you're listening to The New Morning Show. And so, caller? You are on the air, and please, what is your question for Pam from Detroit 48202?
I'd like to ask the question, is what has happened to Detroit as we know it today? Because many people that grew up in that town really went through a lot of problems. I don't know if you remember, there was a movement there, Elijah Muhammad's program, Nation of Islam, was around then. And I'd like to know if you can explain something, if you have any information on that.
Sure. And your name and where you're calling from?
I'm James from Queens.
Thanks, James. Pam?
I don't have any specific connection to the Nation of Islam or the nation existed there. It was one of many organizations.
Caller, we are on the line. We've got another call. You're on the air. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Maria. I'm calling from Yonkers, New York.
Yonkers. All right. Thank you.
Maria, tell us.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Please make your statement or ask a question.
Yes, yes. I have family in Detroit. Matter of fact, I was there this past summer. And one of the things that struck me, my cousin moved back to Detroit a few years ago, and she was able to buy a two-family home for $14,000. Amazing. Amazing. An older home. But I think one of the things that I heard this morning is the fact that all this upheaval that goes on in particularly black neighborhoods has really been thought about by other people well in advance. And, you know, it makes me look at what's going on in Harlem right now. I used to live in Harlem up until about 10 years ago. I think about I-95, how it was deliberately cut through the black communities. So it's, I think as a people, we have to really think long-term as well. And so that's just my comment. And to say that, yes, things are struggling right now in Detroit. Thank you.
Thank you. Pam, any reaction?
Yeah, I'd like to say, you know, on the one hand, it's, you know, it's great that people can get a house for, and this is no critique of the caller's relative, it's great that people can get a house for $14,000, but to understand the other side of that is that whoever sold that house or lost it to foreclosure may have still owed something like $90,000 on that house. So that you know, there are 15 zip codes of the most underwater mortgages in the country, and 6 of those 15 zip codes are in Detroit. So that means thousands of people are living in homes that are maybe worth now $10,000, but they still owe much more on their mortgages for their homes. And so that's the example of how the wealth in homes is denied and has been decimated for a primarily black city.
Pam, we're gonna have to leave it there. We just packed all the way in. No, I want to thank you so much for being on. And Pam has also offered, because she is now on tour with the film, and if you go to the website for the film, you can find out where it's playing. She's in Virginia now. It's going to be around the country in Detroit. Unfortunately, we didn't get word about this until after it had already left New York City, but we will be sure to let everyone know. But she has made a special gift to all of you listeners. And we will, if you email me, and I'll give you the information later, I will send you the link to the film. So you'll email me at kingnetic@yahoo.com, and I will send you the link so that you can watch the film at your convenience. And thank you so much for doing that, Pam, and for being on the air with us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Great, great. Sorry, we're on the clock, but thanks for the gift, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll have you back when you're coming into New York. So, folks, okay. She is making this gift. Now, we had a couple of ways that we could have gone with this. We could have said, you know what? We're going to make this a premium, and for people who join the station, we're going to send this to them. We really thought it was fair for people to have a chance to see the film and not hold something that over your head. So when you email me, here's what I'm going to do. For the people who are buddies and are members, I'm going to go to their emails first, and I'm going to send it out to them, because I'm sure I'm going to get a flood. And if those of you haven't joined or are not members or not buddies, then I will get to you too. Everyone will be gotten to. Nobody's going to get cut off. But you still have a chance to move up the line, because if you become a WBAI buddy, whereas you make a regular monthly automatic donation that goes from your account to the station's account, then you can call at 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. You can go online at give to give, the number 2, WBAI.org. Become a member, or you can send a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. We accept cash. We accept coins, bags of coins, any kind of way that you want to join the station. And then if you do that before we get to the end of the show or sometime before I start working the list, you will move up and everybody's going to get to see the film. But I want to make sure that the folks who have been supporting the station move to the head of the line, kind of like a pre-check if you're air traveling. But it's an earned one, not one that comes from the privilege of wealth.
So this is the kind of programming that we want to bring to you every morning. You've just heard from Pam Sporn, who's the director of this phenomenal new film, Detroit 48202. You will get to actually watch the film if you email kingnetic@yahoo.com. But ultimately, we're asking you to support the station, to support the show, because you believe in non-corporate, listener-sponsored, community-controlled radio. This is a support essentially for our communities, but also for our lives. So please call us at 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602, and become a buddy of the New Morning Show.
And we'll be right back after some messages.
Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't. Can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, get a ticket for an aeroplane.
Code Pink Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Hi, my name is Michael D. Haskins. WBAI is listener-supported, commercial-free, resistance radio, challenging norms and defying them. Let's break down what that means. It means that no clandestine corporate entity tells me how to do my show. You better believe that. It means that you, the listener, and the diverse WBAI community have a voice which reverberates across the tri-state area. You drive this station, so fuel us. Donate by visiting give2wbai.org or pledge right now from your smartphone by texting the letters WBAI to 41444. And thank you for your support.
You've been listening to Los Masis, and we're back on WBAI 99.5 on the dial, streaming at WBAI.org, and we're about to speak to Steve Striffler, who's a professor of anthropology at UMass Boston. His latest book is titled Solidarity, Latin America and the U.S. Left in the Era of Human Rights, which was just published by Pluto Press this year, 2019. And so we've spoken to Professor Striffler before, in particular last week, and just to give you an update of what's gone on in Bolivia. Evo Morales was deposed. There was a coup in Bolivia, as our listening audience is aware. Evo was exiled in Mexico, and we're beginning to see now organized protests by indigenous people. So we're welcoming Steve to tell us about the situation. What's happening on the ground right now?
Yeah, well, thank you. As you said, right, so Jeanine Añez is the interim president. She's committed to new elections, even as she's kind of acted in a very sort of partisan way. Evo's in Mexico, pushed out by the military. And really the right is doing, I think, what we might expect in that it's, you know, taking advantage of a crisis that it helped create to potentially remold Bolivia politically and economically. And there's a certain nastiness, I think, on the ground and in the streets, rooted in times and open racism against indigenous people. And the real question is really whether the right can somehow consolidate its power, which it, if it does, I don't, you know, will not be good for Bolivia and particularly for indigenous folks, or whether, you know, the absence of Morales will allow social movements to regroup and perhaps even recapture state power in some form. But I think whatever kind of government emerges, and maybe this is a little bit of optimism, but I think, you know, a return to a particularly kind of draconian form of neoliberalism that's rooted in sort of an anti-indigenous racism that we're seeing, I think it'll be hard to sustain in the sense that Bolivia's social movements aren't going to disappear and may even, you know, experience something of a rebirth in the absence of Morales. But it's certainly, you know, we're at a point where it's very much in flux.
So we've been listening to reporting from Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. And part of what she's done is that she's amplified the voices of indigenous people who are protesting and the reasons why they're protesting. We know that there is anti-indigenous sentiment, that it's far right wing and it's got a fascist coloring. I've read, and you have perhaps, that there are links between the right wing emerging government in Bolivia and the Nazis. There are Croatian landholders that settled in Bolivia after World War II connected to the Nazi regimes, and they are at the helm of this crisis. But part of what the indigenous people are saying, at least a subsection of them, is that there is an attempt to privatize gas holdings, but also lithium mines. Can you tell us about the economics of the coup?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, absolutely, in the sense that, right, these are not good folks, and they are certainly stirring anti-indigenous sentiment. But I mean, I think with the broader goal of returning to kind of an economic model where they're in charge, where the country is open for business, where the government's role is to redistribute wealth upwards instead of, you know, downwards. And I think, you know, part of that is tied, you know, as you mentioned, sort of lithium is tied to U.S. interest. And I think in the case of lithium, right, lithium is extremely important for electric cars, batteries. Bolivia has somewhere around 70% of the world's reserves. And there's certainly going to be, and I think it's important to keep in mind, right, Morales was not against mining. I mean, the model of economic development was very rooted in extractivism. But I think in terms of U.S. and sort of the U.S. interest, right, the Morales government was attempting to build a relationship between Bolivia and its natural resources in which revenue from those resources wouldn't benefit transnational mining companies, wouldn't benefit the country's elites that are now trying to reconsolidate power, but would benefit the Bolivian nation. That is, where you nationalize the country's resources and use profits to reduce poverty and other things. And I think this makes sense to a lot of us, but it represents a departure from the country's path, and I think it's certainly a threat to local elites, domestic elites, U.S. economic interests, not simply in the sense of profit, but I think also in the sense of demonstrating that there's another economic model. So it's a political threat, and that you can run a country and an economy on very different principles, on a model that's not rooted in a religious kind of worshiping of markets, but an economy regulated by a government for the benefit of its citizens. And I think what we're seeing now is the right wing trying to reverse that.
So this is a model that has been used by nations fighting colonial rule. Colonialism underdevelops so-called third world nations, and when a revolutionary situation emerges or when there's an attempt at nationalization, we see the nationalization of industry for the reasons that you outline. Can you tell us now about the relationship of the United States to the coup? I've heard from that same interview of people on the ground that those in charge have been in fact funded by the Trump administration, that monies are going from the United States to the leaders of the coup to fund what is now an assault on the people. I think there are 23 people who've been killed. And before you answer, we are listening to Steve Striffler, who's a professor of anthropology at UMass Boston, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 on the dial. Steve.
Yes. No, so, I mean, U.S. involvement in a direct sense, I think, in sort of our knowledge of it, is still evolving. But, I mean, I think it's a part of a broader package of U.S. imperialism that we should be quite familiar with. I mean, there are reports, right, that you know, many members of kind of the military that have been involved in this were trained at the School of the Americas, which, you know, Morales had broken relationship with over 10 years ago, but these folks still seem to keep popping back up and are involved in this. USAID had been funding groups opposed to Morales for years. And that's, I think, a normal procedure for the United States. And so to learn, you know, that Trump is also funneling money to these folks, I mean, there are kind of deep alliances between kind of, you know, I think right-wing groups, and certainly personified in some ways by Trump, and folks in Bolivia that, you know, date back for some time, but are part of, again, this sort of broader package of neoliberalism that I think, as you sort of alluded to, is really an attempt to return to an economic model that certainly benefits elites, but also in a way that ensures kind of U.S. political kind of hegemony in the region, in that, you know, you have an economy that is regulated in a sense by markets and not for the benefit of the country. And this is part of a pattern of a longstanding, you know, history of U.S. involvement kind of in the region.
So thank you for that. And the question that I have is, there are many people who think that the populism that exists now is the result of Morales, when in reality it was the popular movements that grew to the point that they were able to bring in a president like Morales. Can you tell us what the climate is like and what the movements are like now on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, I think the climate is contentious, to be sure. My sense is there are certainly a lot of social movements in Bolivia. They are, you know, in many ways fighting
I'm sorry, I have to cut you off for a second. I hear something in the background. I hear something.
In my background? Oh.
Okay, folks, you know what time it is. That means that it's going to be a chance for you to make your calls and ask Steve any questions you have. 212-209-2877. 212-209-287. Call me. Call us. Sorry about that, Steve. When it hits us, it just hits us, and we let our folks know. So please continue with your answer. And are you? And I should have asked you. Are you okay with taking calls from our listeners?
Yes, sure.
Great.
Remind me. Yeah, go ahead.
No. The question had been about the popular resistance to what's going on there now. How, you know, what level is it at, and how strong?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's strong in the sense that, right, I mean, I think as you correctly point out, I mean, it was social movements that produced Morales, and he was very much a leader that emerged out of you know, popular struggle. But it's always been a popular struggle in a set of social movements that are, as we might expect, you know, somewhat divided and fragmented. And I think in many ways right now, right, the question is, can they sufficiently cohere to push back and come out, I think, on a massive scale to reverse kind of what is going on and push back on the right? Because I think we know the right's blueprint, right? It is that they're going to attempt to consolidate based on their political and economic power, based on their connections to the military and the police, and they're going to come after kind of the political system and the economic system. And the question is, I'm somewhat optimistic in that Bolivians aren't going to accept sort of a return to neoliberalism in an extreme form, or towards or embrace kind of the racism that we're seeing within the country at the moment.
Steve, we've got a number of calls coming in.
So you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live on WBAI.org. And we are inviting you to call in because this is you're seeing some changes. Now we're making opportunities for folks to speak to the people who are on the air. And so what we're hoping that you'll do is that you will join the station and that you'll become a buddy because of the fact that we're making so much room for you all. You used to have to wait till the end of the show. Now you're part of each segment, an important part, and a part that we consider so important that you want to join. So this is a quick little plug before we get back to Steve to ask you to become a WBAI buddy. Have a regular amount taken from your account and put into the station's account where you will monthly support us. And we would ask you to go to give to WBAI.org, give the number to WBAI.org, call the pledge line 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or come down here with a big bag of money or mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217.
Sorry about that, Steve, for interrupting you. We just lost the call, but you were talking about the strategy that is used by the right wing to consolidate its power, and whether the disparate and diverse elements of the popular movement that brought Evo Morales to power will be able to cohere to push back against the fascists. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is an interesting question. I mean, I think part of what the right has done in Bolivia, but also like elsewhere, is becoming really good at mixing sort of a combination of nostalgia and fear to produce coalitions that are, you know, rooted in resentment and sort of a xenophobic kind of expression. And I think in the case of Bolivia, you know, there are sectors where you have a white, conservative, rabidly pro-capitalist opposition that emerged. There was nostalgic, not, I think, in the sense of that Bolivia's economic past was so great, but nostalgic for a time when indigenous people weren't in power, but I think where they knew their place, right, in the language of the U.S., where they knew what side of the street to walk on, who had power, who was supposed to behave, how they were supposed to behave, et cetera. And so this is a nostalgia for a very undemocratic time when indigenous people were politically marginalized. And Morales' removal, really, I think, can be seen as part of a broader effort by the right to rid the country of political forces that were pushing what was really a relatively moderate form of kind of cross-cultural democracy rooted in greater equality. And this,
Steve,
was,
we've I got mean, a caller on the line. Caller, right. We've got him back. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. Thomasina from Bergen County.
Hi, Thomasina. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. I'm so glad you guys are back. It's been too long. So I'm calling because I'm wondering on a global scale, have the indigenous peoples around the world, have they created more of a movement than, you know, maybe 10, 20 years ago. Because, I mean, the Bolivians are up against American imperialism, and they're not seem to be getting any help from the movements within South America. Is there any hope that there is more of an indigenous, like, global movement now?
Thank you for that call.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really an interesting question. I mean, on the one hand, yes, in the sense that certainly we've seen globally, like, the rise of indigenous people, and I think, and particularly around the kinds of issues that we see in Bolivia, particularly around the extraction of natural resources, and that's not to say those are the only issues that folks have been interested in, but we certainly see that in the United States. We've seen that in parts of Asia and certainly in Latin America. And I think with that has come certainly a broader consciousness beyond indigenous folks, like within the United States, within middle-class folks in Latin America. I think certainly a sense of solidarity and certainly a growing consciousness about some of the issues that they've raised about, you know, climate change and the environment and, you know, how we relate to indigenous peoples, whether or not that translates into and whether or not a global indigenous movement can contribute to the resurgence of political power in Bolivia for indigenous people. I think that remains to be seen. But certainly we see this, I mean, in places in Latin America. And so, I mean, it's not hard to imagine. But, I mean, in many ways, these sorts of fights are very much domestic fights sort of on the ground.
Thank you, Steve. We're going to leave it there, but this is an ongoing hot topic. We want to know more about the rise of indigenous movements around the world. Our caller is right on. Ultimately, an international movement is going to have to pitch in to help Bolivians, but also indigenous people here in the United States who are being attacked, whose livelihoods are being decimated. You've listened to Steve Striffler, who's a professor of anthropology at UMass Boston. He is author of the book recently published by Pluto Press, Solidarity, Latin America and the U.S. Left in the Era of Human Rights. You're listening to WBAI, listener-sponsored, non-corporate, WBAI New York, streaming at 99.5. On the dial, that is, 99.5 on the dial, streaming at WBAI.org. We're asking you to call us. Call us and support the program. You've listened to a show about a film on deindustrialization in Detroit. You've listened to what's going on in Bolivia. Go online and become a buddy. Go to give2WBAI.org or once again call us at 516-620-3602. Where else are you going to get the information that you've gotten here today? Where else in the world do you wake up in the morning and are given the news that's liberatory, a different perspective that's non-corporate, that's listener-sponsored, and that's community-controlled?
Liberatory. I like that word. I like that word. I'm going to use that one now. Add that to my vocabulary. Listen, Johanna is not playing. We have been through so much here, and maybe you're tired of hearing it, but the fact that we were already facing challenges in this climate of corporatization of media, where even our competitors are beginning to bring some of the people we bring on because they realize that there's this leftward shift. But they're bringing the people on at the same time that they're taking money from Walmart and Big Pharma. So where's the contradiction there? So we don't do any of that. We count on you. How much deeper can democracy get that you're able to not only be part of a station, to have a vote and a say in the station, to choose the board members who ultimately work their way all the way up to national control of the station, and then have changes like the ones they tried to put on us, which you would have also had to approve. So you get to participate in a democracy in a way that you can't anywhere else. Tell me that one of these Democrats or Republicans is going to look out for your all of your interests, and we'll get into more of that as we move towards that time. But you have a way now to participate in a democratic and economic way by becoming a BAI buddy. And I know I'm getting feverish because as we get to the end of the show, I want to be able to look at the numbers at the end and find out that people who called in and gave their points of view were able to not only be heard anytime they wanted to, but also were thankful for the information they got and they became buddies. And they picked a monthly amount that was very comfortable for them and maybe a little skosh more because maybe you won't buy that extra coffee or that extra snack or whatever kind of thing. You'll devote it to the station, and that you'll say, I'm going to finally stand up and make sure this station is around, because when it got lost, I really didn't want to hear about what was going on in California. I wanted to know what was happening on my block, in my neighborhood, in my borough, in my state, in the tri-state area. So I'm asking you, just short of telling you, I'm asking you to go to give to WBAI.org, give the number to WBAI.org, and stand up for a station that has stood up for you. And you can also go to 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, and make a pledge and make sure that the station will be here the next month and the month after that and the month after that. It takes you. We don't run to those kinds of places where we're not going to do a story because we take money from Walmart, or we're not going to do anything about the stuff that's being happening to our people being poisoned because of the fact that, you know, they may cut our funding a little bit. So you can also make a donation to 388 Atlantic Avenue, 3rd floor, Brooklyn, New York, 11210. We take cash. We take credit cards. We take items in trade. You can bring us your used car. I probably shouldn't have said that. But anyway.
King, you might recall, and we all know, that the movements that have expanded democracy in this country in the 20th century, the sit-down strikes, right? We were talking about Detroit. Detroit is pretty much the headquarters of the union movement. Those folks didn't get wealthy people to fund their movement. The workers funded the movements themselves. The civil rights movement, it was church ladies funding the civil rights movement.
Ladies, yes.
Church ladies.
Ladies.
With $1, $2, social movements, people's organizations, locally controlled stations like these have to be funded by listeners. Why? Because when they're funded by listeners, corporations and big donors and moneyed people can't come knocking on our door telling us to change the programming.
Yes, and we're going to close out now, and we want to thank you for being here. We want to thank you for calling in. I'm going to thank you in advance for your support. Because once the show ends, I know that you all are going to get up. I can see you now walking over to the phone. I can see you opening up your computers and going to give to WBAI.org and saying, you know, I'm finally going to take that other step because that's the only way we win. Now,
King, you forgot to tell people that it's 42 degrees outside.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So it's a good climate and a good time to join the station. Email me at kingnetic@yahoo.com to get your link to the movie, and those who are members will be at the top of the list, but everyone will get a link.
Have a wonderful day.
Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world. In a bold world for me, yeah. Stars, when you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. Enjoy.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not.